still breathing heavily, his mouth full of a foul, greasy aftertaste, his gen-hanced body keeping him from retching.
"Tastes good, don't it?"
Urgork leered, gesturing for his Medicaid syringe as his body started shaking.
"Plenty more where that came from?"
Polixis threw his head back and roared. The sound, full of fury and despair, filled the basilica, reverberating from the vaults and cloisters, taking on a life of its own, until it sounded like 100 battle brothers, giving vent to a pain that was beyond words. Even the most raucous greenskins filling the nave and balconies were silenced by the terrible sound, and all stopped and stared at the captive Primaris, some fingering their weapons nervously, others casting glances at the pillars and annexes and the high ceiling, as though expecting to see a host of vengeful warriors materialize at the sound of their brother's agony. But none did. Polixis's cry trailed away to a long, low moan, and the sounds bouncing around the basilica faded, until there was nothing but silence. The Medicaid jabbed its syringe into Urgork's flank. The warlord grunted and went rigid, his eyes never leaving Polixis. The space marine looked up at the beast, held its gaze, his expression one of purest, most unadulterated hatred.
"Cog Crusher,"
Urgork said, as his medicines took effect once more.
"Bring the doc here another body."
Castor. The commander's name was Davik. He was a Kelistani colonel, shaven-headed, short and stocky, like most stormers. At some point since the fall of Shabbat, he'd broken his arm. It was bound against his breast by a sling made from a torn-up Numerian camo cape. The injury made making the sign of the Aquila impossible, but he bowed his head reverentially to Castor as best he could.
"My apologies again, Lord," he said. "My men thought you were too large to be anything other than greenskins. The last thing we expected to find out here were the champions of Ultramar."
"In the future, be sure to run through proper target identification drills with your men, Colonel," Castor said.
The chaplain knew his chastening tone was perhaps unjust. They were a ragtag collection of guard outfits, Kelistani, Voitikans, Numerians, a few Faeburn. That their discipline was shaken could hardly be held against them. But Castor was still coming down from an unfulfilled combat high, and that made him acerbic at best. The urge to purge still sang through his veins, battered out by his slowly decelerating heartbeats. He focused his attention on the men before him. When the rock had come down, it had struck the southern end of Shabbat. The forces there had been decimated, but a few units holding the most southerly extent of the slums had avoided annihilation. A scattering of survivors had managed to retreat southwards into the mountains. Davik told the Primaris how he had initially been the second-ranking officer of the ragged group.
"There was a dispute with the Zoyshen colonel yesterday afternoon," Davik said. "He wanted to make a break eastwards for Imperial lines. He thought we could use the trucks we took in the first few ambushes. I told him the trucks would break down, and we'd find ourselves stranded out in the wastes and at the mercy of their damned air cover."
"How many men do you have remaining?" Severus asked the colonel.
He'd been interrogating Davik in the bottom of the gorge when Castor had joined them, absent initially, while he had been blessing the bodies of the three guardsmen killed during the ambush. The colonel glanced from the chaplain to the reaver, clearly uncertain about which of the two skull-faced giants held seniority. Eventually, he addressed Severus.
"Following the latest roll call, 68 combat effective, 11 wounded."
"Do you count yourself among that last number, colonel?"
"A las pistol only takes one hand, Lord."
Castor turned his gaze to the nearest guardsman as Davik spoke. A composite team in the mismatching gear of Voitikan and Numerian infantrymen were heaping the greenskins killed in the ambush, preparing the bodies for torching so as to destroy the spores given off by their corpses. A few kept casting worried glances towards the Primaris, as though afraid the hulking warriors were about to suddenly attack them. They were a weary, demoralized-looking band, caked in dust and dirt.
It was not the attitude Caster would have expected from an outfit that had only just conducted a successful ambush against a superior force. Their morale was all but broken. "This is the third column we've successfully destroyed," Davik was saying, tapping his boot against the thick tire of the orc truck beside him.
"And the third coming up from the south?" Severus asked.
"The south?" Davik asked, a look of uncertainty crossing his stolid expression.
"These greenskins were coming through the southern passes, from the direction of Baspire?"
"No," Davik said.
"No, they've all come from Shabbat. They were turning back. Look."
The colonel moved to the rear of the open truck and dragged away a stained covering. Immediately, the stink of opened innards and the buzzing of hungry, fat-bellied rotwings assailed Castor's auto-sensors. The back of the truck was heaped with the butchered remains of a brace of slope-tuskers and smaller, unidentifiable beasts, their blood congealed in long rivulets towards the trailer's edge.
"They weren't reinforcements," Davik said. "They were a foraging party. They've been coming up into the tombstones ever since they took Shabbat. There isn't enough food for them down there, at least not until their vile spores have taken root." "Lieutenant Tyrannus must be informed of this," Castor said. "If we can confine the Xenos to the city, we may be able to starve them out." "I will send word to the lieutenant as soon as we are able to establish a connection," Severus said. "In the meantime, I am going to requisition one of these trucks along with its contents."
"Why?" Davik asked.
"I was going to have them burned with their bodies." "Not this one," Severus said, gesturing to the nearest truck with his long blade. "I have a use for it. Bring me half a dozen Xenos corpses as well."
To his credit, Davik didn't hesitate, snapping a string of orders to his weary men. Castor could sense his desire to know more, though. As six greenskin bodies were hauled in front of Severus, the colonel spoke.
"Lords, with all due respect, may I ask what it is you're doing out here? Are there more of you coming?"
Castor looked to Severus, partly disapproving of the man's boldness, partly impressed by his bravery. The Reaver responded.
"No. We are conducting a covert operation. We aim to infiltrate Shabbat."
"Assassination?" Davik wondered aloud. "Sabotage?"
"It is not your place to ask us such things," Severus said. "If you are as wise as you are courageous, Colonel, you will hold your tongue."
"Of course. I would not presume to question the objectives of the Adeptus Astartes, my lord. But it would be remiss of me not to offer the services of myself and my men. If there is anything we can do to further your mission, just say the word."
Castor expected the usual cold rebuke from the Reaver. Instead, the skull-faced killer nodded.
"There is, in fact, some assistance your men may be able to provide me with, Colonel. How much in the way of explosive material were you able to evacuate out of Shabbat?"
"Screw it." Mektrok's workshop seemed to be getting busier every night. The greenskin mechanic had secured the collapsed remnants of a manufactorum block on the south side of town the day the lads had stormed the Humi city. A new roof of scavenged corrugated iron had been installed, and the rubble had been heaped high enough to give some semblance of structure. Since then, the workshop's floor, cleared of debris by the efforts of Drok's gaggle of Gretchen slaves, had seen lots of fixin' and tinkering, and played host to the wheels of over a dozen different speed mobs, all eager to get their battered war machines back into the fight as quickly as possible. Drok was certainly doing better business than either of his two biggest rivals, Mex Fixter and Grug. Cogcrusher himself would have been proud, or so Drok kept insisting. Screwit made an obscene gesture at the Mex back as he rifled through his gubbins, searching for a bigger spanner. The other grots around Screwit snickered with ill-concealed humor, clustered around the engine block of the truck they were supposed to be fixing. Drok spun at the sound, eyes blazing.
"Screw it, you little squig munch!"
the orc bellowed, lunging for the Gretchen. Screwit yelped and flung himself over the engine, his scrawny frame narrowly avoiding his master's grasping claws.
He stumbled down on the other side of the broken-down vehicle, intent on making a run for the workshop's open door. Scrag, of course, stuck a leg out in time to trip him. The Gretchen tumbled over his fellow oiler's limb, a flailing hand snagging Drock's work tarpaulin draped over the engine's flank and hauling a mound of the mech's tools down with him. Scrag's plot didn't go as planned. Most of the rusting pieces of equipment came down directly on top of him, knocking him unconscious. Screwit scrabbled through the dirt as the clang of falling metal resounded in his ears, expecting to feel Drock's claws closing around his skinny throat. They didn't. He realized that, far from the cackles of laughter and excitement that would usually fill the workshop when Drock attempted to snag one of his underlings, a hushed silence had fallen. He stayed on his stomach, hands clasped over his head, eyes screwed shut. Still, neither wrench nor fist fell. He opened one eye. Drock was standing over him, but the mech's eyes weren't on his wayward oiler. The scrap-armored greenskin was staring out of the warehouse entrance towards the foothills of the mountains that loomed over the ruined city. There, just beyond the edge of the broken slums, a great fireball was rising up out of the darkness, its thunderclap detonation, initially masked by the clatter of falling tools, rolling back from the dry, dead hills.
"What the—"
Drock began to say, but a further burst of light out in the darkness stopped him. Flashes of color darted through the night, dozens of little traces quickly swallowed up by the blackness. They were describing a pattern down the hillside towards the city's edge. Another explosion burst into life, nearer this time, its report sounding clear across the ruins away to the edge of the rock's crater. Bellows filled the night as the greenskins nesting in the southern slums began to react to the unexpected activity.
"Humans!"
shouted Krunk, the boss of the truck currently being tinkered with in Drock's workshop. The knob waved his axe in the direction of the light show, which appeared to be steadily descending towards the city.
"Let's go, lads! Scabrot, shut up shop!"
Drock bellowed to his apprentice welder as he snatched up his custom blaster. He jogged out into the night, Screwit's antics apparently forgotten, the grots scrambling to follow him. Screwit managed to get to his feet in time to join them, aiming a vicious kick at the still unconscious Scrag as he went. Outside, the night had descended into chaos. Boys were scrambling in from all sides, hefting choppers and blazing indiscriminately into the darkness with their shooters. Most were headed for the city's outskirts, towards the bolts of light that Screwit now recognized as belonging to the Humie's pew guns. The Gretchen, attending the mobs, knew better than to try to follow their masters. Whatever was going on, it wasn't worth a trampling. Instead, they scampered to the tops of the biggest rubble heaps they could find, craning for a better look at the excitement that was waking up the city. Screwit hiked up his breeches and scrambled to keep up, mounting the rubble of the nearest hablock's remains, arm over arm. He used his elbows to force his way close to the highest point. Only Fat Chopper and Drock's chief bootlicker Wrench remained above him. The perch afforded them a view of the city's southern limits, and the column approaching from out of the darkness. It was one of the food-grubbing mobs sent up into the hills by the big boss to get more scran for the lads. Screwit recognized the headlights bobbing through the dark, winding a precious route down into the slum ruins. It was obvious, however, that not all the approaching trucks belonged to the grubbers and scran lads any more. Bolts of light were spraying from the rear of the three speeding transports, shooting towards the two trucks in front, and as they drew nearer, the roar of engines and the crack of gunfire became audible.
"What's going on?"
demanded one of the grots further down the rubble heap, unable to get a good view of the rapidly approaching action. Wrench, eager as ever to be the center of attention, began to provide a commentary.
"Looks like some Humies have jumped a scran ledge somewhere in the foothills, got hold of one of the mob's trucks, and now they is chasing the other two with it." "One truck of Humies is chasing two trucks of the lads?"
another Gretchen demanded incredulously. Wrench's angry retort was cut out by another explosion, bursting into fiery existence just to the left of one of the fleeing trucks. It looked as though the Humies were lobbing bombs, too.
"They's getting right cramped,"
Chopper squealed excitedly, pointing a claw at the mobs now mobilizing out into the slums. Dozens of trucks and war buggies roared through the rubble, headlights playing over the ruins as they bounced along, greenskins holding on to every surface while bellowing and blazing away with their sidearms. The two scram trucks fleeing from the hills were only a few hundred yards from the safety of the orcs rushing to meet them, searing bolts of energy continuing to perforate the air around them as the Humies kept up their pursuit. As the distance closed, some of the hijackers switched to targeting the oncoming mobs, their energy bolts splitting out to lance buggies and open-topped war tracks. Return fire lit up the night, blazing away inaccurately in all directions.
"They're gonna hit!"
Wrench said excitedly. Screwit craned his neck as the Gretchen around and below him jostled for a better view of the unfolding drama. The two trucks, fleeing from the Humies, shot past the lead vehicles of their rescuers, bouncing along the debris-clogged remnants of the city's streets, while behind, the Humie truck came up short. It took a hard right, and to loud jeers, began to race back towards the looming darkness of the tombstones. The dozens of rickety greenskin vehicles tearing towards them accelerated, their occupants furious that the Humies would consider offering a scrap only to turn tail at the last moment. Chopper grunted, cuffing a smaller Gretchen beneath him around the back of the head.
"The big uns need a scrap, else they'll take it out on us when they gets back."
There was a chorus of groans from the assembled grots as they contemplated orcs left without anything to crump. Screwit was too busy watching the approaching trucks to join in. The two that had come down from the hills hadn't turned at bay when they'd reached the rest of the lads, but had instead carried on into the city, thundering past the mound of rubble being used by the Gretchen. It looked like they'd been hit hard by the Humies. Only two boys were left, one at the steering wheel of each of the vehicles, wrapped up good in the ragged capes and goggles the speed boys used when they were out in the ash wastes. Screwit was only afforded a split-second view as the trucks thundered past, kicking out dirt and rubble from their heavy tires. And then they were gone, careering deeper into the ruined city's heart. The rest of the Gretchen were still watching the ongoing pursuit as the Humies fled back up the hillside and into the darkness. Shots pursued them, and another explosion rocked the night air, catching one of the trucks that had been gaining on the Humies. It tipped it over in a gout of flames, sending it crashing into a war truck that had been pulling up alongside and immolating them both. The grots let out a loud gasp, followed by a few cheers, as the pyrotechnics continued, touching off another buggy and sending flames licking along the hillside. Despite all the excitement, it looked as though the Humies were getting away.
"You got lucky,"
Screwit heard Wrench saying as he dropped down from the rubble pile.
"Boss Drock was gonna crump you good before all this kicked off. Screw it!"
Screw it didn't respond. He'd noticed something that wasn't right at all. Something that was just beginning to be snooped on. Before the other Gretchen had realized that he was gone, he was heading into the darkness of the city's ruins, in the wake of the two scran wagons. Grotsnog. Something was happening further south, out in the slums and along the hillsides. Nob Grotsnog had been roused from his sleep beneath the squig-hide covering that his mob had draped over the ruined alleyway, jerked away by the excited bickering of a gang of nearby Gretchen.
"What's happening?"
he demanded groggily as he rolled out from beneath the hide, scrabbling for his axe. Grolk, the mob's big shooter, was stumbling back down from the nearest mound of rubble, his hulking weapon strapped across his back.
"Humies!"
he bellowed as he came, rousing more of the boys scattered along the alleyway. Most of the mob were out scrapping with Morgoth's lads, angry that their rivals had got closer to the Humie positions on the ridgeline the day before. Those who remained behind were half intoxicated with fungal beer, but the promise of a real fight got them awake and alert quickly enough.
"What's going on?"
Grotsnog demanded once more, half-snatching, half-catching Grolk as he tumbled down the last few feet of rubble and into the alleyway.
"Humies chasing the Scran lads,"
the big shooter boy panted, pointing a claw southwards.
"Back down from the hills. All the boys down that way is headed out to crump 'em." "Gork's droppings,"
Grotsnog snapped. He could hear the commotion further south, bellowing, the roar of engines and the clatter of gunfire. There were already dozens of mobs, most of them bigger or faster, between them and the south side of the city. Grotznog had been inordinately pleased with himself when he'd managed to claim the alley close to the big spiky Humi building for his lads early in the occupation, but having a base of operations near the ruined city's heart suddenly didn't seem so smart. Being far from the edges meant far from the fight.
"Don't just stand there,"
the knob bellowed at those around him. "Get slogging!"
"What about the other lads?"
Dunf demanded.
"It's their loss,"
Grotznog said, shoving Dunf towards the end of the alleyway.
"Now, move it!"
The assorted mob didn't get far, no more than a dozen paces. The mounting howl of an abused engine and a squeal of tires, followed by the shriek of poorly applied brakes, heralded the arrival of a truck careering around the remains of a tumble-down refinery smokestack. The vehicle made straight for the semi-clear space of the alleyway, forcing Grotznog and his lads to throw themselves against the rubble on either side to avoid getting flattened by the oncoming truck. Grotznog's angry protestations were lost in the shriek of a second vehicle as it came screeching around the corner to join the first, black smoke billowing from its exhaust vents.
"Watch where you's driving!"
Grotznog bellowed, banging the flat of his axe head against the nearest truck's runners as it finally came to a halt beside him. The git driving it was alone, wrapped up good in a scabby dune cape and goggles. Grotznog recognized the paint job on the truck as belonging to one of the Scran mobs that had been sent up into the hills to help supplement the diet of the hundreds of mobs now assembling in the city.
"Oi, you see the Humies while you was up there?"
he demanded. The driver didn't seem to have heard him, exiting from the other side of the truck's drive compartment. Erzog, on the opposite side of the truck from Grotznog, made to get out of the big greenskin's way, but tripped and stumbled against the vehicle's chassis. It was only as he hit the dirt that Grotznog's sluggish brain registered that there was something very, very wrong about the Scran boys. They were big, bigger even than Grotznog, and none of the lads who'd gone up into the hills had been particularly fine examples of orc might. Even as he realized the disparity, he also realized that blood was jetting from Erzog's severed throat. He hadn't tripped at all. He began to bellow incoherently, reaching for his slugger, at the same time as Dumpf dragged back one of the coverings protecting the slaughtered beasts heaped in the back of the first truck. Even as he did so, a body rose up from the bloody remains, its heavy armor smeared with viscera, a mace in one fist lashing out to crack the greenskin's skull open. Grotznog opened fire. The shattered alleyway resounded with the bark of his pistol, shots spraying inaccurately into the rubble, while around him everything descended into chaos. Grok, slower on the uptake, was struggling to bring his big shooter to bear on the thing that had been driving the first truck. It leapt from the open drive seat straight over the vehicle's bonnet, hideously fast for something so large, a long blade sliding from its ragged cape. Grotznog was only barely aware of a decapitating blow taking Grog's head off. He managed just 5 shots before more wicked silver flashed in the firelit darkness. It took him a few seconds to realize why his slugger wasn't firing anymore. By the time he'd accepted the fact that his severed arm was lying at his feet, fist still clenched around his pistol's grip, a second blow had laid his throat open to the bone. The remains of the mob died quickly, their bellows cut short, their inaccurate gunfire eliminated. Silence fell over the alleyway, sinister and surreal amid the uproarious city. Grotznog tried to get up, tried to fight, but all he could do was keep his hands clamped around his open throat as he bled to death. He was half aware of one of the murderous giants quickly shattering the headlights of both trucks, bringing darkness to the scene, as the two drivers tugged away their capes and goggles, revealing blue armor and leering skull masks.
"The bodies?"
one asked.
"No time," the other replied. "Move."
Castor. The Primaris advanced to the head of the alleyway, low and fast.
"Stay close,"
Severus ordered Castor over the vox. He did so, trying to quell the natural dislike he felt towards infiltration techniques. It had been difficult enough out in the tombstones, surrounded by nothing but the soaring vastness of the mountains, but now that he was in the midst of a city overrun by Xenos scum, the urge to carry righteous death to them was almost overwhelming. He overcame his urges by fixing his mind on the Lectato and its codex-led teachings about the importance of flexibility and adaptability in all of war's many aspects. He was a battle chaplain, not a blind zealot. He had already managed to countenance concealing himself amidst the rancid meat collected by the greenskins in the back of their rickety wagons. Doing so had been a necessary evil, part of Severus's bold plan to infiltrate Shebat under the cover of a distraction led by Colonel Davik. Castor had no idea whether the guardsman in the third commandeered truck had managed to break away from the greenskin pursuit and make it back to the foothills before being caught. Concealed in the wagon's rear, he'd been blind until an orc had pulled back the covering and felt the sudden heat of his wrath.
"There are more contacts closing from the north and northeast," Strix said, consulting the bulky Orspex primary as they came to the end of the alley.
The other two Reavers were crouched behind him, knives sheathed, the crude disguises that had allowed them to race through the orc lines cast off.
"Do they approach with purpose?" Severus demanded.
"No, but they will likely stumble across this location in a matter of minutes."
"And has the device concluded its subterranean scans?"
"Yes, Sergeant. The original locator beacon is correct."
Strix pointed with his own blade beyond the end of the alley, towards the street the trucks had come down.
"Take point," Severus ordered.
They hadn't got far before Castor's visor pinged with a lit-up transmission sigil.
"Vox contact," he said. "We're back in signal range."
"Still no fix, though," Severus replied.
"It will take longer for a proper connection to become established. We carry on."
The Reavers and the chaplain moved out into the street. The darkness surrounding them was riven with the howling of greenskin mobs and the battering reports of their crude firearms, flares of light illuminating the rubble that towered all around, like the great dark barrows of long-dead warrior kings. It seemed that Davik's gambit had been too successful. It felt as though the entire city were awake, the initial disruption spreading from mob to mob all the way to Shebat's heart. They reached the exfiltration point without meeting opposition. It was a sub-street storage hangar, marked out on the powerful Orspex array carried by Strix as having survived the rock's impact. The tremors caused by the collision had not only brought down almost the entirety of the city, it had also split and ruptured Shebat Alpha's underworld, subsurface storage bays, the sewer system, basements, and the subway maglev had all been broken and reformed, and while most of the tunnels had simply collapsed in their entirety, some had remained open. The scans picked up by the Orspex were incomplete, but they offered the best hope of navigating below ground, away from the mobs infesting the surface ruins. Task Force Marilus descended, moving aside the girders and rubble to expose the hangar's entrance. It had once been a vast storage space for a printing business, and its survival was a curious juxtaposition to the devastation of the workshop it had once serviced. Though the lumens had failed, the wide room below remained in an orderly state, packed with sealed plastic containers. A door led to a service corridor, rusting and abandoned, which carried on through to a half-collapsed smelting pit.
"What's the likelihood of the Xenos pursuing us down there?"
Castor asked.
"There is no evidence that they have accessed the underground," Severus replied. "That may change as we move deeper into the city, but for now it offers us the best chance of avoiding detection, and allows us to scan for the largest concentrations of Xenos without putting ourselves at risk. Wherever they are, that is almost certainly where we will find Helix."
There were two possible routes beyond the smelter pit. One was from a section of the maglev line that had collapsed in on itself, providing access from the adjacent rooms and basements. The other was a waste chute that led to the sewage systems. According to the readings on the Orspex, it was still open at the far end.
"Phobos, take the subway line," Severus ordered. "Strix, the chute. Reconnaissance pattern. Maintain Vox contact if possible. Report back here within the hour. Synchronize your chrono countdown."
"I can accompany one of them," Castor said.
"No need," Severus responded brusquely.
"We have to find our bearings and establish just how accurate these readings are before moving any further. They don't need your help to do that."
"So what will I do instead?"
"You will do the same thing as me, Brother Chaplain. You will review the tactical log and mission briefings, and you will wait.
Polixis. The heart had choked his throat. It had made him gag and retch, but the memories were worse. The memories choked his mind. They came on, unbidden, as Polixis remained bound to the rack, a sudden flood, stifling in their clarity and overwhelming in their intensity. He was going to die. They all were. Still, on they fought. Uxis's flamestorm gauntlets had nearly bled dry, the Promethean wells stuttering as what had once been twin spears of flame were reduced to flaring bursts. It hardly seemed to matter any more. Everything around him was a sheet of fire, aliens stumbling and writhing about, blinded by ash and smoke, burning alive in the fury of the Fulminata unleashed. It was like a scene from one of Chaplain Castor's sermons, the coming of the Emperor's righteous judgment, when the heretic and the Xenos would be purged by unending, divine fire. Uxis only wished he had more to give. He slammed his ignited fists forwards, pulverizing an orc's torso as it came charging through the fires, ignited from head to foot. Tyro and Tor were both dead, their gravis plate hacked open, half buried by a mound of orc corpses. Ancient Skyrus had fallen too, still holding his standard aloft, even in death. Extremis was immobilized, one side of its gravlift wrecked by the endless barrage of greenskin rockets and stick grenades. Only Uxis and Captain Demeter still fought. A huge brute of a greenskin hammered two long blades time and again against the captain's gravis armor as Demeter battled to protect the standard of the Fulminata. Uxis was trying to reach the captain's side, but the big orc's kindred were swarming him. Another leapt at the sole surviving aggressor, clutching at him, trying to wrestle him to the ground with a terrible strength. His heavy gauntlet pulverized the skull of another, even as it drove a two-handed chainblade into his midriff. Pain surged as the roaring blades bit deep. A backhand swipe of his gauntlet smashed the orc's head from its shoulders, but it was too late. Another was digging a knife through the armor joints beneath his backpack. He felt his legs growing weak as his Belisarian furnace kicked in, demanding one last bout of slaughter in the name of the chapter and the Primarch. He crushed skulls and broke bones, choking on his own blood, given over to mindless fury now as he sought to kill as many Xenos as he could before they took him. Beyond, he was vaguely aware of the captain. The orc he was fighting had cleaved away one arm with a huge swing of one of its blades, and now it was bellowing with laughter as it stepped away from the crackling arcs of Demeter's Boltstorm gauntlet. It was toying with him. The realization sent a fresh surge of hate jolting through Uxis. He tried once more to reach the captain, but something hammered into his flank, causing him to stumble. A squig had leapt clear through the flames and was now clamping its huge slavering jaws around his right arm, sawing its teeth through ceramite and plasteel. He smashed his other fist into it, causing it to burst in a huge wave of stinking gore and meat, but the effort of the blow forced him to his knees. He could feel his strength ebbing, the pain from his wounds too much to ignore any more. Demeter had fallen as well, his armor buckled in half a dozen places. Uxis saw him framed against the blue and white of the Fulminata's standard, the beastly alien warlord looming over him, burning bodies heaped all about. The captain's blood-splattered white helm turned, and Uxis realized they were looking at each other. Demeter's voice clicked over the vox, somehow still so calm, even at the end. "Courage and honor, brother Uxis." Then the green tide fell upon them both, and they were gone. As suddenly as the vision appeared, it shattered. Polixis's eyes focused again, and his breathing returned. The dead lay before Polixis, silent, the judgment of their glassy helmet lenses damning. "Where were you, brother apothecary? Where were you when we gave our lives that others might live?" Polixis had seen it. In a half-sleep, he had seen Uxis's final moments, and alongside him, those of Captain Demeter. His omophagia, the eighth organ implanted in all space marines, had made sure he was not spared his brother's dying moments. Normally, the implant allowed an Adeptus Astartes to gain a degree of recollection by consuming the flesh of another. Polixis had never heard of it occurring, thanks to the forced consumption of gene seed before. It only added to the horror, choking Polixis as surely as that land had itself, cold and clammy, like Uxis's death grip from beyond the grave. In the longest, darkest hours of the night, Polixis realized that what little emotions he possessed had been bled dry. The calculating part of his mind told him as much, continuing to narrate his situation in its surgical tone, removed from the reality of his predicament. That reality, he now understood, was that the meaning of his existence had been reduced to nothingness. He had sundered his sacred duty to his chapter and the Imperium. He had failed to protect the lives, bodies, and war gear of those in his charge. Worse than that, he had disgraced them, dishonored them with abject defeat. He was trapped, his soul bound forever to the oblivion of regret, locked in the darkness of a body unable to so much as move a single arm. He would die here, he had no doubt. It would be slow, probably butchery. That knowledge did not concern him. His life was forfeit regardless. He had no means to resist his fate, and thus all other considerations became academical. And then, abruptly, the situation changed. He heard a faint metallic groan. It took a second to draw his thoughts up out of the despair that had nearly drowned them. He realized that his whole body had been tense for hours, and that both his arms were now actively pressing against the metal bent crudely round his wrists. That meant the servos were responding. His thoughts quickened. The shame remained, but now there was something more, something that had deserted him as night had fallen and shadows had wrapped up the bodies at his feet. Anger. The urge to immediately rip himself free from the rack and set about the greenskin slumbering around him was almost overwhelming. He forced himself to steady his breathing and slow his heart rate. He had to test his systems. The majority of his armor could still be incapacitated. He relaxed both arms and tried to slowly raise one foot. As he had feared, the servos in both legs were still unresponsive. His armor was gradually recharging after the ministrations of the Xenos prong. It had been days since he had last been struck by it. In that time, he realized his battle plate had been returning itself to full functionality. If he could avoid another shock, he might eventually be capable of full movement. A grunt nearby made him go still, worried that his sudden degree of freedom had been spotted. There was a thud of boots on flagstones, a few snarled words in the darkness. He moved his head slightly, eyes adjusting to pick out several figures on the steps leading to the apse. One was an orc, and it was holding a squirming Gretchen by the scruff of its neck. They had disturbed one of Polixis's captors, who now seemed to be demanding some sort of explanation from them. Their tongue was too guttural for him to make out, but judging by the pointing and the Gretchen's high-pitched squealing, it seemed like they were reporting something that had occurred out in the city. The orc turned and kicked two of its sleeping underlings awake, barking orders and gesticulating at their weapons. Other orcs around them stirred drowsily, disturbed by the sudden commotion. The beast snatched the two it had woken and thrust them down the apse, sending them after the first greenskin and his Gretchen, towards the basilica's doors. It made to follow, but paused, glancing back at Polixis. He stayed perfectly still, watching the greenskin, wondering how much it could discern in the darkness. After a while, it grunted and turned away, hastening after its kin. Something was happening out in Shabbat. Polixis didn't intend to remain in the basilica long enough to find out what. Grimtooth. Grimtooth had told the git he'd let the big boss skin him alive if he was lying. They'd come in the middle of the night, some zogger from Zagby's mob, hauling along a Gretchen he'd snatched from Mech Drog. Grimtooth had almost cracked him on the jaw for waking him, but the boy's story had eventually penetrated the angry fug of the commando's tiredness. There were Humies in the south of the city. According to the Grot's excited, stammering report, some scran wagons had been snatched by some gits hiding up in the mountains. They chased the rest of the scran lads back to the edge of town before turning and legging it. That in itself was only moderately interesting, but Grimtooth had managed to restrain himself long enough for the story to start getting better. The Grot claimed that there had only been a few boys in the escaped scran wagons, and they'd been wrapped up tight. They'd not stopped when they reached the city, but kept going, on past the mobs rushing after the Humies. Then Zagby's mob had stumbled across a bunch of bodies. The greenskin seemed vague on the number, probably due to his inability to count, all from Grotsnog's mob, including the deviant Nob himself. According to Zagby's lad, they'd been
cut up real good.
Even more importantly, they'd been littered around the two scran trucks, now abandoned. All told, it constituted what Stabskar would have called a
situation.
Grimtooth had kicked Krulkill and Urgin awake and told them to follow. Both had known better than to complain. The commandos trailed Zagby's lad and the Grot out into the city. The Git wasn't lying about one thing at least. Something had certainly stirred up Shabbat's new greenskin inhabitants. The mobs occupying the square beyond the spiky building's doors were rousing, arguing and scrapping among themselves as distant bellows and gunfire resounded through the night. Grimtooth shoved his way through the press, the sight of his cape cowing any protest. They'd all heard about Stabskar's skinning and how Grimtooth had succeeded where the previous Nob had failed. Now his boys guarded the beaky prisoner beneath the very eyes of the big boss. Despite the prestige being close to Urgork brought with it, Grimtooth realized that it felt good to be back out again. For all the idea that the commandos were a cut above the footslogger mobs, boys would be boys. They hadn't had a proper scrap for days, kept in while other lads had attacked the Humey ridgeline over and over. The boys were getting fractious, and Grimtooth could threaten to crump them only so many times. Word about the mysterious trucks and Grotsnog's corpses was just what they needed. It had set the commando Nob's instincts on edge. There was a hunt in the offing, and he wanted to get stuck right in. The guides led them through Shabbat's night-shrouded ruins, south towards the city limits. In the remnants of a dark alleyway, they came across the rest of Zagby's mob. They were gathered around two idling trucks, grunting and restless, clearly eager to fully claim the abandoned vehicles for themselves and roar south towards all the commotion.
"Definitely scran wagons," Grimtooth said, as he surveyed the bloody contents in the open rear of both trucks, using a torch carried by one of Zagby's lads.
He turned to the bodies of Grotsnog and his boys, scattered around the vehicles.
"They ain't being touched,"
Zagby promised. Grimtooth grunted, not believing for a second that the mob hadn't already pillaged the corpses. He picked his way from one to another, turning them over with his boot. Their wounds were all clear and sharp, made by long blades and a great deal of strength. All except one. One of the boys had received a crushing blow to its skull, staving it in and leaving the orc lifeless against the wheel of one of the trucks. Just as he was about to move on to the next body, he noticed something abandoned beside the truck's tire. He sniffed and picked it up, turning it over in his hands. It was a ragged cape, like the ones used by the footsloggers out in the ash wastes or up in the high hills. There was blood on it, crusted and dark.
"You've seen this before?"
he demanded, holding the threadbare cloth up in front of Drock's Grot.
"Yeah, boss,"
the ranty thing squeaked.
"Seen them scran boys wearing 'em. Them's what their drivers had on."
Grimtooth held the rags close to his face, hawked and spat, then inhaled deeply. There was no mistaking it. He turned to Zagby, baring his tusks in a wicked grin.
"Send your boys out, all the nearest mobs. Get 'em here right now, and tell 'em to keep a sharp eye. There's beaky boys around, and we is gonna find 'em."
Chapter 10 Skull Masks. Castor. Phobos and Strix had yet to return. Castor remained in the smelter pit with Severus. It had been quiet since they had descended underground, the greenskins seemingly unaware that so many of Shabbat Alpha's deep-sunk storage containment blocks and access tunnels had remained open despite the rock's devastation. The smelter pit itself was a good example. With space in the industrial sprawl at a premium, it was a workshop that had been sunken down into the city's bedrock, its fume and waste flumes and ventilation shafts, keeping the metal presses and bench lines from being shrouded in toxic smoke. 100 labourers would once have filled the subterranean space with the pounding of hammers and steel, but now it was deserted, tools gathered neatly, great sheets of plate stacked awaiting the presses and moulds. Like the print shop, the everyday orderliness was a surreal counterpoint to the ruination that Castor knew was heaped just above. Severus sat down beside the broken-down entrance to the maglev subway line. Castor took a seat on one of the solid metal workbenches across from him, the frame groaning beneath his weight. Time seemed to pass with infuriating slowness, defying the chaplain's attempts to ease it along with a string of murmured prayers from the Lectato's Psalter. Even disregarding the desire to find Polixis, to be so deep in enemy-infested territory without being able to strike was anathema to Castor. In the silence of the pit, he found his thoughts straying, doubts materializing, like one of Severus's death brothers from the shadows. He should not be here. He should not have abandoned the Fulminata. The entire venture was almost certainly hopeless, and was going to cost the chapter not only his own life, but the lives of the Reavers as well. Polixis would have stopped him. He could almost hear his older brother's words, as stern as the chaplain's when he wished them to be.
"The chapter comes before your personal quest for honour, Castor. It must come before everything, even before you and me. You know that. Yet I must be the one to repeat it to you."
He realized one hand had strayed to Salve Imperator's maglocked haft, as it so often did when darkness surrounded him. He forced himself to set the rising doubts aside. He had considered his course, decided upon it, and now had no choice other than to maintain it. The fruits of the seeds of doubt were death, defeat, and dishonor. He turned to Severus. The Reaver hadn't moved since taking his seat, a dire, death's-edge shadow on Castor's optic enhancers. After considering him, the chaplain spoke.
"When Lieutenant Tyrannus gave you this assignment, what were your immediate thoughts?"
Severus's eyes darted up. He said nothing for a while before responding.
"I was pleased. I considered it a challenge. A challenge because it is unlikely to succeed. Because it offers numerous operational difficulties that will push both my own abilities and those of my death brethren. I suspect you would get on well with my brother if you conversed with him more often. You are both adept at avoiding questions." "You mean we are both more analytic in our responses than you, brother chaplain?" "I suppose it's a matter of perspective," Castor said, allowing himself a tight smile.
"Is perspective something you permit yourself to indulge in often?"
"It's usually an unwholesome luxury," he admitted.
The pit lapsed into silence once more. Castor resisted the urge to unchain his copy of the Lectato again. He'd insisted on bringing it, despite its unwieldy nature and the covert status of their mission. It was chained about his waist along with Polixis's gladius. The two items were the only concessions Severus had allowed. Castor found himself reflecting on how unnatural it felt to be under strict orders. It had been a long time since he had been subjected to the barked commands and stinging rod of his reclusium superior, and his rank as chaplain afforded him numerous privileges beyond the command structure of regular battle companies, privileges that he now realized he had come to take for granted. His current situation exemplified his own presumptions. He had allowed his arrogance to deceive him into breaking with the letter of the Codex Astartes. The realization sent a pulse of anger through his thoughts, and that in turn left a cold, bitter wake of shame. His reflexive response to any difficulty had become one of fiery rage. He understood that now, understood that at times he was too close to becoming just another deranged zealot, one who justified his own increasingly radical actions by measuring them against a false belief in his own high standing. This was the consequence of breaking the letter of the Codex Astartes. These were the seeds of pride and arrogance. The realization haunted him. He spoke to Severus once more, seeking release through idle words.
"Were you disappointed to be drawn away from the front line?" I am a reaver. I do not belong on the front line, the Death Brother said tersely. I belong behind the enemies, or in their midst. The skills of my brotherhood are not fully realized if they are fighting the Emperor's enemies face to face. We are better employed elsewhere. And what about your two brothers, Strix and Phobos?
You need not concern yourself, Chaplain Castor. None of the Death Brethren required any urging to volunteer for this operation. In fact, Scaris wanted to knife-fight for the honor. An undertaking such as this is the very purpose we exist for. Besides, it is for Helix. Any of us would die for him.
There was emotion behind the statement, even though it was delivered with Severus's usual cold inflection. It made Castor's heart beat faster as his mind turned once more to Polixis. That even the Reaver, seemingly so cold, so removed from the rest of the Brotherhood, held such respect for the Apothecary, reaffirmed everything Castor believed. Bringing Polixis back was something worth dying for.
"We must find him, my dear brother," he said quietly, "for all our sakes."
Polixis. Whatever form of patience Urgork possessed, it seemed to have run out. The warlord appeared to be in a foul mood, as Polixis jolted from his catalepsian node rest. Weak sunlight filtering in through the basilica's broken windows, and the gaps smashed in its walls and roof.
"Dark!"
the warlord bellowed as he mounted the apse, his small eyes fixed on Polixis. The Medicae Orc hurried to attend its master, fumbling with its satchel of syringes and tools. Urgork stopped before the rack and cast around, mismatched eyes raving with a hint of mania.
"Where's that git Grimtooth?"
he bellowed. One of the commandos was shoved to the front of those who'd been guarding Polixis. Frozen before the hulking patchwork monstrosity, it managed to stammer some sort of explanation in a tongue too guttural for Polixis to comprehend. Urgork let out a snort of pure frustration and thrust a hand out towards the Medicae. After a few seconds of fumbling, the runty greenskin passed a syringe to the warlord. The beast rounded back on Polixis, drool from his distended tusks, splattering the Primaris.
"You is forcing me to take desperate measures," Urgork spat. "But I always wanted to see what the good stuff does to you big humies."
Urgork held the syringe up for Polixis to see. The foul-looking yellow liquid it contained, bubbling dangerously.
"Yous might feel a little prick," the orc said,
and plunged the needle into the apothecary's left tacit port. The effect was immediate. Polixis felt a pain like nothing he had ever experienced before shoot from the entry point, immediately diffusing his left thigh, hip, and groin. Usually, even the worst agony would only flare for a few seconds before a space marine's enhanced physiology overcame it. A three-part process of deadened nerves, hyperpotent stims, and cranial surgery meant that there was almost no chance of a member of the Adeptus Astartes being incapacitated by his injuries. This pain, however, did not go away. It grew. Polixis gritted his teeth against it, muscles taut, trying to focus through the agony he could feel spreading through his body. He was sure the substance he'd been injected with was the same one Urgork used to control his fits, yet it acted more like a poison than any stimulant or suppressive. He could feel it burning through his body, travelling along his A-delta and C-fiber network, burning out flesh and nerve endings, and sending pain sizzling to parts of his brain that should have remained dormant. A cry escaped his lips, and he realized his limbs were straining at their bonds, threatening to buckle the metal. Urgork hadn't noticed, attention focused on Polixis's features as the Primaris fought against the anguish. Eventually, it lessened. The pain, which had spread all the way up his abdominal muscles and down past his left knee, began to recede. Polixis mastered himself, driving out the horrific ache the substance had left behind as it burned itself out. Normally, his Diagnoster helmet would have been screaming warnings at him, reading vitae signs ravaged by the orc's vile concoctions. Instead, he had only Urgork's hacking laughter as the beast yanked the syringe from his thigh.
"Good medicine, ain't it, Doc?"
the beast demanded.
"Makes you feel right as rain. But you see why I don't want to take it no more. You is gonna fix me up." "You will suffer in agony," Polixis snarled, spittle flecking his lips, "for the rest of your days, short though they may be." "Still mavin', ya git," Urgork snarled, his dark mood returning.
He leaned in close.
"We've been zogging about together for too long. The lads is restless. Can't have the big boss sitting about playing with some humey while there's loads of crumping that still needs doing. So kill me,"
Polixis spat, defiance surging through his mind, fists clenching as he prepared to wrench them from their restraints.
"For I will never aid you." "I knows dat," Urgork said,
rancid breath washing over the ultramarine.
"Known dat from the start. We could have done this the easy way, but the truth is, I wanted to see what you could take. Now I'm just gonna rip all I need to know right out of your skull."
The warlord turned and shouted something into the mob of greenskins crowding the basilica. Those nearest the front parted, pushing and shoving to get out of the way of the figure that limped up the apse steps in response to Urgork's summons. It was stunted, a runt not dissimilar to the Medicae, but this one's green skull was lumpen and distended, ringed by thin white hair. It carried a totemic staff in one bony hand. Strangest of all, it was blind, tapping its way ahead with the staff. Polixis had never heard of a creature without sight surviving in the barbaric environment that passed for greenskin society. The thing came to a halt before Urgork, cringing in the huge shadow of its misshapen master.
"This is Dabiki,"
Urgork said, pointing at Polixis, as though the smaller Xenos would be aware of the gesture.
"And this here is my boss, weird boy, Sly,"
Urgork said to Polixis, smacking the creature on the shoulder and making it twitch and groan.
"He's seen you before, Beaky, in a big dream while we was in mad space. This the one, ain't it, Sly?"
The greenskin tapped his way closer to Polixis, staff outstretched, the bits of bone, trophies and fetishes tied to it rattling. It sniffed and grimaced, milky eyes staring up at Polixis, and the apothecary found himself shuddering beneath its sightless gaze. He remembered the Medicae describing an orc psyker it hated, and he had encountered the crude shamanic warp users of the Xenos race before. The taint of witchcraft filled his senses.
"This one's trouble,"
the orc shaman said, growling like a small hound around a larger caged predator.
"He's gonna cause a lot of crumping real soon, boss." "But he's the one,"
Urgork reiterated.
"He's gonna make me even bigger and stronger, ain't he?" "He'll make you more killy,"
the psyker said, squinting up at Polixis, cuffing drool from its tusks with a spotted green hand.
"But it won't be easy, boss. His mates is coming for him." "Good,"
Urgork said bluntly.
"More cramping to do. Now get to work, Sly. Wasted enough time softening him up for you."
The orc psyker raised its hand and planted it on Polixis's breastplate. At first, nothing happened. But then the greenskin began muttering under its breath. Its eyes started to glow, suffused by an ethereal green energy. There was a crack, and verdant lightning ignited around its swollen cranium. Its thoughts came for Polixis, and he screamed once more. Castor. The Vox came back online fully just under half an hour before Strix and Phobos returned. Castor was still seated in the smelter pit when the sigil on his visor lit up again. He blinked the transmission icon without hesitation.
"Prime Alpha, this is Salve. Do you copy?" he said.
He'd tried half a dozen times since the signifier had first